Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This Saturday, you'll have a chance to relive the years of the baby boom as the Tulsa Performing Arts Center presents Boom with Canadian theatrical performer, comedian, and voiceover artist Rick Miller. Miller, who's best known to American audiences for hosting the ABC series Just for Laugh, and here in Tulsa for his previous performance of McHomer, a one-man performance of Shakespeare's Macbeth done in the voices of The Simpsons. In Boom, he presents the 25-year history of the baby boom in about 100 minutes, from the boom of the atomic bomb in 1945 to the boom of the Saturn V rocket powering Apollo 11 to the moon. In the course of the evening, Miller gives voices to dozens of personalities of the era, from Nikita Khrushchev to Janis Joplin, and tries to remind us that the cycle of history is in many ways a revolving door. With an innovative, immersive set and projections, he brings the post-war era to life. Miller is an incredibly talented performer who's worked in classical theater and avant-garde. He was a part of Robert Lepage's nine-hour production, Lip Sync, to musicals, to stand-up comedy, from commercial film to television, to cartoon voiceover work. He's considered one of Canada's top theatrical and comedic performers, and he'll be in Tulsa for a production of his one-man show, Boom, which takes place this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Williams Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Rick Miller, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
This piece, Boom, is your most recent multimedia performance piece, and it's about the baby boom years, which is a big target to tackle. What was the inspiration for this piece?
Well, I'm not a boomer, I should add. I was born, actually, of the little baby boom that happened after Apollo 11 launched the first manned spacecraft to the moon. It was a bit of euphoria. I was conceived and born in 1970. So that said, I'm fascinated by that generation because I think not only was it the birth of most of the music that I like, but culturally, politically, it was such an incredibly influential time. And baby boomers still, they wielded a lot of influence. They still do. And it's my DNA, so to speak, not only physical, but cultural. So I wanted to understand more of it. I wanted to learn more about my parents and what it was like to live through that time. And it led me along this path. And here we are 3 years later, and Boom is playing everywhere now.
So how did you go about learning about what was essentially your parents' era?
Yeah, well, it started actually interviewing my parents. I interviewed my dad, as one does when your parents get older. You try to get their stories, and you know, while they still remember them, really. And it was quite touching, actually, to hear new stories, ones that I hadn't heard before. And also, my family opened up their archives of photos and home videos, and I realized that how we remember and what we remember not only tells us about where we come from, but about who we are now, and I think most importantly, where we're going, because history repeats itself a lot more than we like to think. I think we become our parents more than we like to think. So I was interested in how these circles spiral around. So I started gathering stories of that time, and that included historical stories, you know, the main political figures of the time. And what I'm always interested in is how this stuff connects together. I could do a whole play about Che Guevara, but to me, what's interesting is to tie in what was happening in Cuba to what was happening in the Cold War to what was happening in rock and roll and how all this stuff connects together. And that's what Boom is. It's this fast-paced tour through the music and culture and politics of a generation that really did change everything.
Well, I think Americans, you know, we're chauvinistic. We tend to think it all revolves around us. Well, I think when most Americans think of the baby boom, we think of it as a peculiarly American institution. Was the same thing happening in Canada?
Same thing in most victorious countries of World War II, and there were a lot of them. The baby boom didn't happen in the same way for my dad, who was born in Vienna, in war-torn Vienna. Mm-hmm. So that was another point of interest for me, was that, yes, we think of the typical boomer story of being, you know, the war veteran comes home and the wife goes back to the kitchen, you know, all these kind of funny and yet terrible things. And the common thread of those stories is that, yes, that was more of a North American phenomenon, the suburbs and such. But it's a far more complex story if you look at what was happening around the world. And that's what I wanted to paint a bigger portrait of what was going on. But yes, the thread of rock and roll and of culture, America really was driving a lot of that. So the story is centered in North America, but it has a Canadian element as well, because we're very much tied to you politically, culturally, over the years. Yeah, it is. There are elements of that common boomer story, but I'm really trying to paint something with a bit of a bigger perspective.
Now, I know when you're doing the show in Canada, there's a whole section on Trudeau mania. Do you keep that in when you do it in the United States?
I don't, actually. I've decided, I have to make certain edits
right.
as I was writing this play. And I don't want to necessarily shy away from Canadian history. As a matter of fact, the three characters, one from Vienna, the three main characters that are sort of the, it's structured like a documentary. So
right.
these are more or less based on my parents and people I've interviewed. But one is a draft dodger from Chicago who flees the Vietnam draft and, as many people, ends up in a Canadian university. The story centers on the city of Toronto, so it by nature is a North American story that happens in Canada. But the events and all the music and all the culture and all the politics, Americans will definitely recognize all of it. So I throw in a little bit of Canadian history, just, you know, to let people know that there's more to the world. But it's a U.S.-centered story, which is why I think it's going to play so well down everywhere in the States.
It begins with the atomic blast, ends with the man landing on the moon. That's a big chunk of history. What are the big themes you wanted to emphasize?
Well, yes, the starting with a boom, ending with a boom. I wanted to cover 25 years in 100 minutes, and that means 4 minutes per year. So I can't tell every story, as I said before, but what I wanted to get through was this idea that time, whether you live in 1945 or 2014, time doesn't stop. It's the same length every time, and it's a circle, and it keeps going round and around. So the themes that I have are often these ideas of cycles, of generations, of the idea of the Occupy movement that had its roots in what was happening in the late 60s, even the words Occupy and the system is broken and all that stuff. It benefits us to look back and then fold it back into the future. So these are some of the themes that are through there. There's a lot of talk of spiraling and of gaining perspective. The first time the Earth was photographed by Apollo 8, the Earth was photographed from a distance. That was a huge, hugely influential photograph because you gained a little perspective on how small our planet was.
Yeah,
so that's
no.
one of the big themes. But beyond that, I think what happens is that after the war, there was a sense of trying to package people into little boxes. You watched TV, you watched a box, you ate from a box, you drove and lived and worked in little boxes. It was an idea of trying to keep the world under control from what was a very disturbing time in World War II and even before then, World War I. So it was a time that was trying to keep everything under control, but then there were so many young people born at that time who were given new tools of communicating with each other and of connecting with each other through technology, that it led to this incredible spiral of everything becoming political. So culture, the music you listen to, what cut your hair was, everything was political. And so that's another thread that I have, is how politics and culture spiraled together in the 60s, and it led to this huge explosion of creativity and of a lot of other stuff we know about.
Right. I was thinking of some of the themes from that period, and one of the first things is standard of living. I know I've seen a shot of the piece where you're literally standing over a Levittown, and how the suburbs and the beginnings of this freedom, really, the automobile-based culture changed literally how we lived our lives.
And it's so interesting to go back and to realize that because many people lived in, as I said before, these boxes, you didn't have much of an idea that your neighbors were going through a very similar thing. It was trying to keep things isolated. And marketing, the evolution of marketing over that time as well, there's a bunch of ads that I use that show the evolution of political marketing, you know, going from the
right.
simple, like, I like Ike, everybody likes Ike kind of ads, very innocent, to the brutal stuff from the late 60s,
right.
where, you know, Lyndon Johnson's campaign showed a, you know,
atomic blast,
the Daisy spot where you have this little girl picking flowers and all of a sudden this atomic blast zooming in on her eyes. It's just, it's remarkable. So what happened? How did we get there? I think you're right. A lot of it is this sense of standard of living, putting us into this sort of organized map of everyone kind of looking and wearing the same thing and looking the same, living in the same kind of house. And naturally, that's going to cause a rebellion from teenagers who are naturally rebellious by biology.
Well, I was thinking of some of the other themes. Fear was a big part of this generation. It was fear of communism, McCarthyism, nuclear destruction, the whole Cold War, and later the environment.
Exactly. And I think the environment was one of the later threads that came out of it. And the environmental movement in the 70s certainly had its roots in the stuff that was happening in the 60s. And also the threads of the main activist movements. The civil rights movement really spiraled at that time. It led to the women's rights movement. So, yes, I tie all these things together into the music and into the politics. But I think the emotional core of this story are the people from today's perspective that are in their 60s now, looking back, talking about it, and reliving it in a way. And so what I'm doing is I'm playing all these characters, but I'm living it chronologically so that people who lived at that time will re-experience or maybe learn something about what was going on in the rest of the world. But people who didn't live there, like me, like my kids, can gain a perspective and say, you know what, we may think we're so special all the time, and really... Every generation's been called the me generation. It wasn't just our generation or my kids or even our grandparents. That's just the way history flows. It's a constant circle.
Well, and of course, the way you'll do it, I'm sure you're going to do it with lots of humor. That's your trademark. And you're going to be utilizing your voice to create most of the voices we're going to hear, whether it be people we don't know, these invented characters, or as well as very famous people in history. This is the beauty of this piece, I think.
I think you're right. It seems to be, in the times that I've performed it before, people connect in different ways. Some people, for instance, wouldn't know who Perry Como was, but there are people who, you know, certainly know who Janis Joplin is. So by reliving and experiencing these characters and, you know, literally embodying them, surrounded by media, I'm taking people back. Some people have said it really does blow you away what happens in that time, what I can actually pull off. And that's part of, as you say, what my selling point is my voice can do crazy things, and it can go from all the people from 1945 to 69 in a really entertaining, visually interesting way.
Now, you know, the art of impersonation is always really interesting to me, and I assume you learned pretty early you could mimic people.
It was something I sat up in my bedroom when I was a teenager, and I had an audio cassette at the time, and I'd sort of sit there imitating rock stars, and it was just for myself. I always wanted to be a rock star in some way, and this is my way of, well, if I haven't become a rock star, I might as well try and, you know, make fun of them in some way.
Right.
So I'm not doing parodies, and I'm not doing karaoke. Every time there's an imitation, it is trying to convey a bit of the mood of that and the voice, obviously, and a bit of the look with little costume elements, but it's also trying to show what was happening in the world at that time, because that's ultimately what I'm trying to do. I'm not just trying to do karaoke. I really am trying to say that what energy gave us Led Zeppelin and the Doors and that, you know, all that stuff, as well as going back, like what happened when Elvis first took off his guitar at Milton Berle's encouragement and started shaking his thing on TV. It's scandalous, right? And so for young people to look at that now, they go, really? That was scandalous? But it was. In the same way that John Lennon saying, you know, be more popular than Jesus, the scandals that happened are also part of this play, because that's just where we were at the time.
You know, what's interesting is I was thinking about impersonation. The golden age of impersonation was the baby boom era, you know, with Ed Sullivan and all the great impersonators that, you know, it was the new thing, you know?
You're absolutely right. And one interesting thing in Canada was, because part of Canada is French, what I didn't realize was that every time a new song came out, a new single came out in the States, that night there would be a studio in Montreal that would record an impersonation band, but they would translate all the lyrics into French.
Oh, my gosh.
and the next morning, it would be out on the radio. So it's this industry, right, this culture industry, where people all of a sudden saw this incredibly affluent, influential group of young people who all wanted to be part of the same movement. It's not that everybody was a hippie or everyone was a radical, far from it, but everyone wanted to be part of something. And culture was this this way of connecting, either through a transistor radio or through Dick Clark on television or jukeboxes or high school dances. It was this way of linking people together. So Boom really does celebrate that, but it also comments on the history of that.
My guest today is Rick Miller. He's a theatrical performer, voiceover artist, and comedian. Tulsa Performing Arts Center present his one-man show, Boom. It's a multimedia performance documenting the baby boom era. Takes place this Saturday night at 7:30 at the Williams Theater of the PAC, and he joins us by phone today on Studio Tulsa. Well, what's really cool about this show is this interesting set that you have where you're using multimedia, and it's almost like you're sort of immersed in this imagery, and the imagery plays such an important role in telling the story in this piece.
It is. I think media is one of the main things that drove the 60s to where they were, because technology was improving. You know, back then, to gather around the radio, you tell that to young people and they go, what? You know,
what's a radio?
What's a radio? And what's a phone that has a dial? What is it? What does it mean to dial something? So, you know, I show through these little bits that are, you know, media clips, essentially. When the rotary phone was first introduced, there was an introductory video as to how to use it. So it's very funny. It's kind of ironic from our perspective. But I think it's important to show that the evolution of technology, you know, we started with photos from that time, and no one has video because video was not invented. And yet, come the early 60s, my dad was one of the first people to get a color video camera, Super 8 or whatever it was at the time. So to show the evolution of technology and media is really important, because it goes back to the idea of how we capture, how we remember stuff. It tells us something about, some people like to just let things live in their mind, and other people are incredible archivists. And luckily, my dad was the latter. He kept everything. Yes, I use media in all of my shows, but it's always for a reason. And in this case, I'm in this cylinder, I call it a time capsule. Media is projected around me and on the floor around me on this disc, and it evolves with the time. So what starts in more sepia colors and black and white turns into this explosion of color by the end. By the time I'm doing Sly and the Family Stone, and we're in 1969, I mean, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, and I like that idea of how you're using media, you know, because you think about, you were talking about the kids, you know, the Prince's phone, you know, now this is a long forgotten relic. That was the cell phone of the teenage years in during the boom.
Exactly. And one thing, I heard a lot of stories of people getting a transistor radio where, you know, you have little headphones and you listen to it under your covers because it was, you know, rock and roll was still in some ways the devil's music. And so your parents would be afraid and preachers would feel afraid. And it was this thing that young people would feel so empowered. So everyone could, the way when the iPod was introduced, you know, 1,000 songs in your pocket. Back then, to have the radio in your pocket was a huge deal. And so I'm reliving this in not with a wink and a smile, but it's to look back and say, what's going to happen 30 years from now? What is the cell phone going to be? Is it going to be part of a play that looks back nostalgically and goes, imagine a time when we had cell phones. Now they're digitally imprinted in our cortex, you know, or whatever. I love looking back. And I always do it, not just to relive or to learn. It's always to try and speak to the future. I have kids. I can't help it. I'm a bit of a teacher. Boom has a bit of a teacher side to it as well. And I think it's important that we don't forget not only the wonders of the past, but the mistakes we've made.
You know, a lot of things happen in that 25-year period. And I imagine as you're working out, there were things that wouldn't work. And as you were developing the piece, what were the events that didn't work, and what were some of the ones that you found easiest to put together to sort of create this quick narrative and convey what you wanted to convey about these events?
Well, it's an interesting point, Rich, because I spent a lot of time on Wikipedia. It was one of those plays, you know, normally playwrights are told to stay away from Wikipedia if you're trying to tell a serious story. But in this case, I had to go back and find out what were the main events of those particular years and how they were connected chronologically. And there were so many interesting things that happened in the Cold War, just politically, right, around the world, that I didn't know and thought, okay, I'm going to put it in the first draft of Boom. But then the first draft of Boom was just enormous and way too complicated, and it would have just lost people. So I had to simplify the narratives and the threads so that I have to talk about Martin Luther King, because one of my characters is a black man from Chicago who is learning about the civil rights movement and becomes part of it. That had to be a thread. So what I do is I talk about Gandhi's assassination. Gandhi was hugely influential on Martin Luther King. So I plant that seed in 1948, and then come the late 50s and 60s, come back to Martin Luther King, obviously on the march in Washington and the I Have a Dream speech, but then in his assassination in 68. So these little threads I had to choose which were the threads I was going to keep going and which I had to drop. What did I have to drop? You know, right now I'm so obsessed with what I have in there that I can't even remember what I threw away. But no doubt I threw away a whole bunch of great Cold War intrigue that I just can't tell the story of what's happening in Russia and in the Soviet Union. I can touch on it every now and then because, for example, there's the October crisis and, you know, Kennedy and Khrushchev are engaged in a bit of Russian roulette. But other than that, I can't go through all the interesting stuff that happens everywhere around the world. I had to really narrow it down.
It sounds like one of the big themes is the fact that history repeats itself or the events of history seem to follow in a like manner. So, you know, the communication revolution we're experiencing now, there was an equally important communication revolution in during the baby boom years. You know, the civilization clash that were evident in the Cold War are still with us today, except it's two different civilizations, the Middle Eastern civilization and the West. So I gather that's perhaps one of the big overarching themes of the events you're trying to talk about in the boom years.
I think it is. The image that I mentioned of Apollo 8 and the Earth rising, that photograph, was, it's always my perspective. I realize when I look back on all my shows, I always have an image of the Earth at some point. And it's not just to get hokey and to say we're all connected, but in some way, we have so many devices and so many places in our lives that zero us in or that zoom in to either what's on a screen or they make us forget the larger connections. And I'm always interested, and that's partly through my father who taught me to think this way, I'm always interested in the bigger perspective. Because we have enough places to learn about specialization. So this play is, yes, there's little elements that I think of it as this curated time capsule where I've chosen little bits here and there. But overall, I think you're right. The overall feeling is that, wow, what an overwhelming experience from such an incredibly influential period and how it all tied together into a whole. I mean, that's looking back. You know, we tend to look back and make sense of these things. They don't feel that way when we're living them.
Right.
But that's the benefit of hindsight, is you can look back, find threads that a kid growing up at the time would never have connected. And that's why I think boomers aren't just going to relive nostalgia at this play. They really are going to learn something about their generation told to them by someone who was not even born at the time.
My guest today is Rick Miller, a theatrical performer. Tulsa Performing Arts Center presents his one-man show, Boom, a multimedia performance documenting the baby boomer era, Saturday night at 7:30 at the Williams Theater. Features this really cool multimedia set, and it's sort of like, it was again, you were talking about the box. You know, we built Levittown houses. We had surrounded our living room with a box, a television. And this sort of box encompasses all this media that you use to tell the story. It's a very cool looking set.
I realize it's probably hard for people to imagine. If people are curious, if you go to boomtheshow.com, probably at the Tulsa PAC website as well, but yeah. I know you can find a little 1 minute trailer that shows a lot of what it shows, and you can hear a lot of what you and I have been talking about. It might help people get a bit of context.
How many impersonations are you doing in the show? Do you keep count?
I haven't yet counted, to be honest, but I
predict. But everything, aren't you doing Che Guevara?
Around 100.
Aren't you doing Che Guevara?
Yeah, you know, just for a line or two here and there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm trying to be accurate with all of this, even with some of the TV announcers that, you know, some famous news reports of Cronkite reporting on Kennedy's assassination or yeah. Edward R. Murrow taking down McCarthy on CBS. I really try to be accurate with all this stuff, including all the commercials that I do, which to me are so entertaining. You know, what cigarette do you smoke, doctor? Anyway, these kind of things I find are just yet another voice added to it. So I haven't counted, but I would guess in 100 minutes there are about 100 different voices, some which recur throughout the play and others that only appear once.
Now, you've been here before with your previous show, McComber, right?
Yes.
And that was the voices of the Simpsons performing Macbeth. Now, that sounds like it's very funny. Is this played for laugh, a boom played for laughs in the same way?
You see, I never necessarily played McComber just for laughs. I was.
Well, they come when you do
they
Burns.
They come by virtue of the fact that it's the Simpsons, too. You know, I was trying to have the Simpsons do their best possible Macbeth. And part of that is them, you know, being somewhat ridiculously serious and having to kill each other. So I think the comedy came from not so much the stupid jokes, but from the act of throwing the Simpsons in Macbeth, which is funny in itself. It could have been just a stupid party joke, but I did it for 17 years because it was a very entertaining play that worked on a lot of levels. With Boom, my goal whenever I make anything is just I want to be interested in the experience of living through it and in communicating to people. So humor is always part of that because that's part of the spirit of live performance is making people laugh. But ultimately, I want people to share something together so that their minds are taken somewhere else that a screen couldn't give them. And that's partly through the connection with a performer and partly through the connection with people in the audience who you're seeing this with and who after the show, you're going to come in the lobby, we're going to have a talk back, and we're going to share stories together because I do that after every Boom performance. I go out and we have people ask me questions, but they tell their stories. These are stories sometimes that it's not the same old stories we tell. It's things that have been stirred by what they've just seen on stage. And that's when things are at its most rewarding for me, is when new thoughts, new stories, new connections happen because of my work.
You're currently touring Boom. I know later this year you're going to be in Toronto for over a month, in Vancouver and Montreal and all over Canada. But you have two new pieces you're working on. One is you've already done a reading of. It's called it's a version of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And then another one called Money. And again, the Money is another version of Boom. It's sort of a subversive way of teaching us things about the economic system, it sounds like.
No, different things are at different stages of development. Yeah. Money is still in the conceptual stage. I'm trying together and make sense of all of these things as I go ahead in life. And Boom touches on history. Like Homer touched on Shakespeare and literature. Money touches on finance, how I think we should all understand more about all of these things, and I try to find my way in it and hopefully help others. 20,000 Leagues, which you mentioned, is premiering at the Pan American Games in Toronto in 2015, so that is very much in development, but it's a different show. It's not a solo show. I'm directing four other actors. Yes, big multimedia show, but we're also dealing with what is a huge undersea adventure, trying to convey that on stage. And I'm pretty convinced that Boom and 20,000 Leagues are going to have great lives all over the United States. But right now, I'm from Canada. It's the place where I begin touring, and every city in Canada wants all of my shows. So I have to sort of pace myself and go, okay, Canada, the first 2 years, other than Tulsa, and I'm doing a few cities in the States with Boom, but it'll probably be a whole year before I come back down because the demand in Canada is so big.
Well, we wish you great success. Hope a lot of people come out Saturday night at the Williams Theater. Rick Miller, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rich. It's been fun.
Canadian theatrical performer and comedian Rick Miller speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He'll be bringing his multimedia performance piece, Boom, to Tulsa this Saturday night at 7:30 at the Williams Theater at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. For more information on the production, visit TulsaPAC.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.